Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
En Camino with Kit Hogg.
Hello and welcome in Camino with Janie Jewson.
Good morning.
And me, Kit Hogg, on this Saturday, the 6th of June. It's lovely to have you with us. Hope we find you well on this sea mist kissed morning here on the Costa del Sol.
Isn't it beautiful?
You know what? It's as clear as a bell in the mountains.
I thought it might be because it started rolling in. I saw it from where I am this morning, about 9:30.
Ah, right. So you woke up to clarity and then the mist rolling.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's great, isn't it? It's what they call a day bochornoso. It's going to be a muggy day
because
the mist burns off.
Yes, and it reminds me of when I had cataracts.
Oh. Right, on today's show, Janie goes to a celebratory lunch at the Art Society de la Frontera. I tell a historia positiva, which means a positive tale, about a morning in Ronda. Even though it's not yet midday, we take afternoon tea and explore the curious English affection for the cucumber sandwich. Across the pond, meantime, the US is shaping up for a massive summer. Andy Wood takes us through not only next week's inauguration of the 2026 World Cup, but America's upcoming 250th birthday. As the Pope and Bad Bunny touch down in Madrid, we explore why British women are reputed to be the angriest in Europe, and is having your very own swimming pool just a whole bunch of hassle for a fleeting moment of pleasure?
En Camino with Kit Hogg.
Yes, so Jenny, tell us about the celebratory lunch at the Art Society de la Frontera. It sounds super highbrow, but what actually were you celebrating?
It was the 20th anniversary of the foundation of the Art Society de la Frontera, which is an organisation that is associated with the ones all over the UK as well, which are about art, and they discuss, they have lectures. It's a kind of a formation of a groups of people. You become a member and you have a passion for the arts. And that can be, it's not just paintings, it's arts, you know. I mean, for example, this year's lectures include about strange skyscrapers, Charles Dickens, the great performer, short history of art theft, things like that. So this is a celebration of the 20th anniversary, and it was a lunch that took place in La Finca Fusion restaurant near San Roque, down here.
Okay, so it's art, literature, painting, sculpture.
That's right.
Sounds great.
Exactly.
Did you exhibit? Did you take some of your stuff?
Well, I did. They used to have this thing called Feasting on Arts, which they're not doing anymore. This time it was just a display. I was invited to go along and show some of my artwork because I have never done that before.
Mm-hmm.
So I set up a display with a few other people showing their work, not actual paintings. And we were there as the guests came in. There were about 80 of them. I used to be a member of this society about 15 years ago, and I forget time has passed. And I noted that, you know, quite a lot of these people were the same people, but older.
They were just about recognisable, were they?
Yes, there were a few wheelchairs. There was one chap without a leg, and when asked how he was, he said legless. Oh. He actually chose to have the leg amputated as opposed to, regular doses of insulin for his diabetes. I mean, it was...
Blimey, what a choice.
They weren't ideal customers for me because, in fact, they were at that stage in life where they're sort of dropping off rather fast, and they're getting rid of things.
You don't necessarily need to acquire more stuff.
No, no, no. They've got everything they wanted. Yeah. Now it's time to shed it.
I think I've got to that stage, actually. Can I be bothered to load something else into the house? Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. So anyway, it was a fascinating day, and it changed my view, but I did get a commission out of it, which was rather nice.
Okay, so just going back to the age thing, the demographic of the Art Society de la Frontera, is there no new young blood coming in?
Oh, yes. Now, the new director of this is Nicola Jacks, and she's Scottish, and I wouldn't know what age she is, but she's certainly under 50. So there's hope.
Yeah, because you just don't want everyone to be sort of 15 years old. You need an injection of injection
blood.
Of youth. Yeah. So good. I'm glad you've got some young blood at the top.
Yes, yes. And they're not just going to be talking about the old masters. You know, it's actually going to be more contemporary interests this year by the looks of it. So hopefully they'll attract more people, more young people.
And for anybody listening who wanted to become part of the Art Society de la Frontera, what are the strictures for joining?
What would they need to do? Well, they can go online. They can contact them, Art Society Membership @gmail.com. The cost of an annual membership, I'm not sure of, but it's €90 per person per year. And they don't have any meetings during the summer, so the new membership runs from October through to September. I would recommend it, and you can go along to occasional lectures, you know, just turn up and it will cost you just a one-off fee in San Roque, and there's a meeting once a month. I think it's on a Wednesday.
Mm. Yeah, sounds improving. El País newsletter. I get this email probably weekly, actually, called Historias Positivas. Positive news.
Of course.
Things that turn out well, you know, like cooperative vegetable growing in Galicia, schemes for disadvantaged kids in inner cities, those sorts of things.
How refreshing.
All here in Spain.
Yeah.
And like my trip to Ronda on Wednesday, which, considering the last time I went to Ronda, we broke down on the way and never got there, went exceptionally well. So that is a Historia Positiva. I just thought I'd share it with you.
Tell us about it, Kit.
Now, if you're a regular listener to En Camino, you will have heard me doing the occasional Only in Spain rant. Well-meant but derisory comments about bureaucrats, banks, contractors who don't turn up, overly authoritarian police who do, tax and traffic fines, indecipherable ironies that exasperate expatriates here in our very own Shangri-La. This shouldn't happen, but they are the reality of life. But last Wednesday wasn't like that, because everything went perfectly to plan.
No, me diga.
Yeah, really, I'm digging. It's one of those days where you envisage something and it's got to get your ducks in a row, and things actually worked out. So I left home with three objectives, all quite modest.
Sorry to interrupt. So you predicted it was going to go well before you went?
I didn't predict. I just had this vision, sort of warm, honey-coated, fuzzy vision of things actually going well.
Kit, that's so unlike you. Carry on.
Anyway, they call it optimistic outlook. I had three objectives. None of them were like, you know, rocket science. Well, the first was to get the wheels aligned on my truck.
Mm-hmm.
The second was to get a spare key for it.
Oh, yes,
that
the
was
saga.
Slightly
yes.
dodgy. And the third was to buy birthday cards for the cohort of friends and family who were born early in June. I've got a rash of birthdays this month.
Isn't it on Tuesday?
No, mine's not for ages. Don't worry about mine. I don't have to worry about my birthday. It's other people's birthdays that you have to worry about.
Okay, it's your brother.
I'd rather ignore my birthday. Anyway, and so rather than drive to Estepona, which would be my normal instinct, I went instead across the mountains to the iconic Andaluz town of Ronda. And it's not only a must-see place to visit, which is usually packed with tourists, but tourists were pleasantly absent on Wednesday. But as it turns out, it is a great place to get things done. So two different friends had recommended me two different locales. Firstly, the Tyre Bay, a place called Euromaster, which I thoroughly recommend if you want new tyres or alignment. I had an appointment for 11:30. I was out of there with Germanic precision. They weren't Germans, but the Germanic precision. By 12 o'clock, I was out of there.
Oh, my God.
The wheels having been aligned, at 40 euros it cost me or something. Really nice people, very helpful.
Must have felt like you'd died and gone to heaven. I mean, this doesn't happen.
It was a springboard to my second achievement, which was the spare key. Now, spare keys, what is it about car keys these days? I think Renault began it probably about 20 years ago when they decided to create a credit card instead of an actual key.
Yeah, it's not a credit card, but it's a piece of plastic, that's flat and
absolutely, yeah.
Stick it in the car somehow.
Yes, you stick it in the car. You don't actually have a key. It's all electronic and sort of super intangible. The last super key I had was kind of like a black pod that if you had it in your pocket and went to open the car, it knew, it recognised somehow that you were opening the car, and the car, which had previously been locked, unlocked on its own. And then when you get in the car, there's nowhere to put the key. You don't insert the key into a keyhole. You just have it sort of floating about. Press the starter button, and as long as the key is within the vicinity of the car will start. This is the modern way of doing things, Jane. which is terrible because, of course, the key floats about and you know it's not in the keyhole because there isn't a keyhole.
You've never been good at finding keys anyway, have you, Kit?
I haven't.
No.
The other thing about these modern keys is they have a battery.
Yeah.
And when the battery runs out...
Nothing works.
No, as on a serial banana. Mm-hmm. So getting a new key is a positively... it's expensive, it's complicated, and it's very specialised. I was quoted 280 euros to get a new key here in Estepona.
Is that because you wanted a spare or because you'd lost...
No, I needed a spare.
Okay.
I haven't got a spare for my new car, which is a 2004 Toyota Land Cruiser. And it is a key with a fob on it that operates electronically. So it's kind of semi-modern.
Mm.
Yeah?
Mm. So it's not... When you say it's got a fob on it, it's like a...
I don't mean a fob. I mean a pod. A black bit with a button that you press.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Like mine. Okay,
yeah,
I was wondering.
Probably
not okay.
yours.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I met a friend of mine called Steve, and he said, no, you want to go to the shop in Ronda next to the Patisserie Patricia, which indeed I found having been to have my tyres aligned. And I walked into this shop, and it was like a heel bar for boots. And there was a rack of old man's... Those old man's caps, mm-hmm. and pen knives, and there were some women talking animatedly in the middle of the place, and I thought, really, are these guys going to be able to cut me a car key? Not a problem. I got an option of two car keys, one an electronic one, or one an ordinary manual one. The ordinary manual one, I walked out of there having paid 60 euros. So that was the second big achievement of the day.
Wow.
Incredibly.
I'm very confused because you've been talking about electronic ones. Now you're talking about a manual one. So you can't use this in the same way.
No, you have to put it in the door and use it manually. And of course, I was wondering that whether it would actually start the thing. And it did. It works perfectly. It works perfectly.
It's a miracle.
It's an absolute miracle. So that was the second good thing to happen to me. In my Historia Positiva, the third thing was very much less challenging, buying some postcards which masquerade as birthday cards.
Oh, well done.
So, very good day. Let's talk about the Pope. Last week we mentioned that the Pope had to call the branch of his bank in Chicago to sort out a few personal ID details. That was quite a funny story, which I won't repeat.
He had to call his bank.
Yeah, all right, I will repeat it, Jenny.
Come along.
So the Pope was told by a caring father, you know, one of his mates, Luke, listen, Leo, you really have to get your stuff organized, your bank organized. So Leo calls Chicago from the Vatican, yeah? And he says, and they take his details, and they say, okay, well, he gives them his name, his name, actually the Pope's name is called Robert Prevost. So he and that's his bank account name. And they say, well, you'll have to, that's fine up to a point, but you'll have to pop in and see us. And he said, well, I can't pop in. And it's not convenient. What is your problem? I've given you all the details you want. And they say to him, no, I'm sorry, you're going to have to pop in. And then he said to them, would it make any difference if I told you that I was Pope Leo? And the bank teller put the phone down because she thought it was a hoax.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was the story, last week's story about the Pope. This week's story about the Pope. We love the Pope on this program. It just so happens he's just landed in Madrid.
Hey, hey.
About half an hour ago.
Yeah, I heard he was coming.
Yeah. And on the first papal visit to Spain for 15 years, 11:30, which is getting on for 11:30 right now in 10 minutes. He's welcomed at the Royal Palace. There's no let up.
Wow.
And this afternoon he will meet the homeless in the barrio of Lucero doing a tour in his Pope Mobile.
They bring him along in the aeroplane or they make drive it over, do you
think? I think there's probably a resident Pope. In fact, there are two Pope Mobiles in Spain at the moment. Okay. There's one in Madrid.
Yeah.
Which you'll be getting into in a moment. And there's another waiting for him in Barcelona, because in Barcelona on Wednesday, he celebrates Mass at the inauguration of the tallest tower, El Torre de Cristo, of the Sagrada Familia. All the more auspicious because June the 10th marks the 100th anniversary of the cathedral's architect, Antoni Gaudí. It should be spectacular. Mm, it's the sort of Mass I would like to go to, actually.
Wow, me too.
Just awesome, eh? And after Barcelona, the Pope goes down to Tenerife and Gran Canaria. So, buen viaje.
Oh, wow. It all does sound very exciting, doesn't it? And I am amazed that news like that about him having to ring the bank about his account can actually hit the news. At all.
Ah, well, it depends on your sources, Janie.
It does, yes.
Yeah. Here in Camino, you hear it first. The Times says, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. I'd agree with that. But it goes on to say that British women are among the angriest in Europe. Janie, do you identify with that?
Well, I'm a British woman. I wouldn't know how to compare myself with others, but
anger levels, anger management.
No, exactly. I mean, anger's not something I actually felt at all until a few years ago, 10 or so years ago, and it's quite a new emotion for me.
She's been angry ever since.
But according to data from a global survey collected in February 2024, there's been a sharp rise in the anger levels of British women. The finding comes from the Hologic Global Women's Health Index, an annual league table based on the polling of more than 76,000 women and girls worldwide. So nearly a quarter of us Brits apparently have feelings of rage higher and in comparison to just one in seven on the continent. We a high level of rage, apparently. And Helen Goffey, who writes in The Independent, says that when you look at the facts, it makes sense. I mean, what with the anger in the wake of the Sarah Everard's murder, the endless Me Too saga, the still boiling rage over the Epstein files, and on top of that, we've got the no doubt true allegations against the Mr. Al-Fayed, owner of Harrods and the Paris Ritz Hotel. There's 150 women have actually made allegations to the police about him. Of course, he's not here anymore, and neither is Epstein. But all of this is still sort of colouring how women feel, you know, in the UK. These cases are not being dealt with. Mm. And she says, Helen Goffrey says, haven't we heard enough of women's rage? Well, I don't think so, because it's actually, things are still simmering along. And then we get to, for example, we have the journalist and now she writes on Substack. We have the author, a lady actually that I met when I was in the UK, called Claire Cohen, who's now an independent journalist, and she used to be the women's editor of The Telegraph. She says, apparently a quarter of us, only a quarter, really, reported feeling rageful compared to one in seven women on the continent. Why so many British women are absolutely filled with rage on a daily basis? Some of the responses online to the survey range from things, men saying things like, women are encouraged to be self-pitying and to calm down, dear. And she says, it surely couldn't be anything to do with our rights, healthcare needs and concerns being put to the very bottom of the pile at every turn, could it be? And she goes on. You know, I mean, I can see, you know, when you think about when this, we're living in a nation where teenage boys, this is recent, who rape girls whilst laughing about it and filming the attack are essentially allowed to walk free, as happened in the appalling Fording Bridge case this month. I mean, whilst their victims are left to pick up the pieces of their lives. I mean, you know, this, it, you can see why things like this are occurring. I mean, can you understand that, Kit, why we should be angry?
Yeah. I'm just interested in how you actually measure anger. I suppose if you feel rage, yes, yeah.
Well, what it said in the survey was actually, you know, they asked the women, you know, how did you feel angry yesterday? You know, how often did you? How much part of the day were you? Did you feel anxiety? And they answered questions like that. So,
the cause of this anger is men, yes?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily men, no, at all. And I think the...
It's male ideas. It's male culture.
Yes. Yeah? I think the fact that, you know, the laws are made by men or were made by men for men does have an aspect to do with it. And me personally, you know, having been in court and tried to get justice and to some kind of closure over a situation which was to do with domestic abuse, myself, I've been a victim of domestic abuse, coercive control, post-separation, etc. And then being basically, you know, having my... I will say this, and this actually makes my heart pound to do so on the radio, that I have been in court and I have watched my ex-husband admit to threatening to slit my throat, and he was not even admonished for it. Now, this is I'm stepping on dodgy ground here because, you know, actually talking about it makes my heart pound, you know, even harder. And I'm on the radio. You know, this is difficult and it is frightening speaking up. You have to keep quiet. And you also have to consider, you know, the effect on people around you, your friends, your family, your children. You know, should you be talking about these things? And that's one of the reasons why, you know, the women who are put into situations like this, for example, in the Epstein files, Epstein case and in Al-Fayed, they don't say anything. They're frightened, they're threatened, they're intimidated into silence. And there is not a system there that's bringing this out, making women feel safe. They're shut down and they're silenced,
Jenny,
as I was.
Jenny, I can feel your rage.
Oh.
I can feel your rage. let's calm down now. I want to talk about something completely different because still in Blighty, the summer season is getting underway. We've got Test match cricket, strawberries, Wimbledon, and of course the cucumber sandwich. Thinking about it, it's kind of an odd idea to put a sliced cucumber between two pieces of bread. Apparently the habit began among the 19th century expatriates in India, cucumbers being native to the subcontinent, the Brits being partial to a chilled cucumber filling the sandwich just to cool down, I suppose. Cucumber sandwiches then became a symbol of upper class culture through a mix of Victorian social norms, practical dining conventions like afternoon tea. Afternoon tea became formalised in the mid-1800s as a distinct light meal between lunch and dinner, signalling leisurely domestic refinement. Afternoon tea followed strict conventions. Extended little finger on the porcelain teacup. Have you ever done that, Jane?
Oh, yes, and you put that little... I know, I still do that sometimes.
You do, automatically, because you can't get your finger through the hole, so... Because the cup's so the actual handle is so small.
It has to be a light cup, though, to do that, doesn't it?
Yes, porcelain. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Bone china. That required, anyway, small portions of delicate food that require little chewing, make no mess, and could be eaten with fingers. Cucumber sandwiches fit this ritual to a T for their lightness and delicacy. Mild, succulent, bland, palate-cleansing, thinly sliced cucumber between crustless, evenly trimmed white buttered bread, mint leaves.
Mint leaves? What, in the sandwich?
Yep, Queen Elizabeth's favourite. She insisted on mint leaves. Neat, dainty mouthfuls that match Victorian ideals of refinement. Shape?
Triangular.
Quite right. Social distinction. Cucumber, with little nutritional value and very little point to them anyway, emphasise wealth. Nonchalantly underwhelming, visually neat, making little mess, easy preparation for genteel afternoon tea. A moderate intake of cucumber sandwiches at around 4 p.m. would not inhibit one's appetite for dinner some 4 hours later. Plus, because cucumbers, native to India, as we said, are difficult to grow back in Blighty, they would be cultivated along with pineapples in a hot house, a heated greenhouse, which only the rich could afford. The tea time cucumber sandwich, therefore, became emblematic of the host's wealth and status, a sort of understated ostentation. The current day American take on a cucumber sandwich is called the Benedictine, and that has Philadelphia cheese in it, which actually sounds much more interesting.
I don't know, actually. I rather like
You're a purist. Jenny.
I mean, we could not be more at the other end of the spectrum, from given what we were just talking about, to go straight to cucumber sandwiches, of all things. I mean, what aids amazing...
From women's rage to
Yes, women's sandwiches. Rage
the thing
to
is,
cucumber...
Jenny, you needed to cool down.
I did, so I did.
Yeah, we've got a message here from Dawn, who says...
Are you sure you want to read it? We don't know what he could say.
Don't, we're going to have to come back to you on that. That fantastic message about a bridge across the Tajo. I will read, learn, and inwardly digest while we have a break. And then we're going to try and get hold of Andy Wood for another inimitable letter from New Jersey. So we'll see you after the break.
En Camino with Kit Hogg.
And now, it may not have escaped your attention that a certain tournament called the World Cup begins in America next Wednesday, and that a month from now, Americans celebrate their 250th birthday. It all points to a massive early summer in the United States. And here to give us a sense of it all, live from New Jersey, is Andy Woods. Andy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Kit. Hey,
Janie. Oh, Janie's just ducked out for a moment. She got quite emotional.
She's going to make some sandwiches.
Oh, did you hear the bit about the sandwiches?
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff, Kit.
Yes, I thought it was interesting. Do you know what a Benedictine is?
No idea, other than a monk.
No, in fact, it's an American version of... It's the American version of a cucumber sandwich. And do you know what differentiates it?
Oh, please enlighten me. I'm on tenderhooks here.
It's got Philadelphia cheese in it.
Oh, there you go.
Which actually would make it marginally more interesting than the British version, I feel.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, man. So the World Cup begins on Wednesday. How amped is the US for this?
Yeah, it's it starts actually. You know, it's over three countries, right? Canada and Mexico. It starts on the 11th in Canada, I think, with the first game.
Ah, okay.
Being the first US game. Is on the 13th, on Saturday.
Yes, yeah, so today.
US versus Paraguay. And that kickoff is at 2 a.m. So to answer your question, is it amped? There's been a lot more focus on the price of tickets and the price of getting to the game and some of the things around the game. But there is a lot of excitement about the World Cup. Yeah. It's massive this year. It's absolutely massive.
Hang on, man.
You know, three countries.
Did you say 2 a.m.?
2 a.m. in L.A., yeah.
Why would you do that?
9 p.m.
I guess
it's to accommodate European TV or global TV.
Right. Loads of people desperate to watch Paraguay. What? Wow. Okay.
Well, Paraguay versus USA.
Yes. I mean, okay. Yeah, yeah. Just to talk about the American team for a while, Mauricio Pochettino, I didn't realize until yesterday, actually, when I was looking at the team, that he is your manager. Ex-Spurs, of course. Have people got behind the American team? Is there excitement for that particular team?
Yes, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of interest. There's a lot more people play it now. But it's just the scale of the thing. You know, there's 48 teams this year, so there's 104 games.
Yeah,
so big. You know, it's hard to maintain momentum across, you know, to get excited to follow the whole thing because it's just so massive. I think as it gets into the sort of quarterfinals, if the USA is still in it, the excitement will be intense.
Good. I'm pleased. I mean, do the Americans even like football? I mean, isn't it seen as a soft middle class option to baseball, basketball, or gridiron?
It's really popular at a high school level, and I think for all the reasons that make sense, right? It's a lot more aerobic for your child than baseball, which is basically a lot of standing around.
Yes.
So you're sort of more healthy. And the cost of participation is really low compared to the other two big ones, right? Football and hockey, where the equipment is hugely expensive. So there's a popularity amongst all levels, stratas of society, I think. And it's gaining a lot of, I think, you know, the major league, Major League Soccer is getting better fan bases. Yeah, I think it is popular.
I guess there's a sort of ethnicity about it, and in terms of its preference, I imagine it's big in Latino quarters. Does it correspond to ethnicity in its appeal?
Well, there's a vast Latin American diaspora in the United States, and of course, they're all soccer crazy, right? And they love it, but it spreads across all stratas of society. It's a popular game here. It's a popular game, and the game, and this is reflected in what has become the main story, which is the ticket prices, which are crazy. They're talking about, you know, for the VIP boxes for the final, which will be about 60 kilometers from my home. You know, $300,000 if you want to.
Oh, never, never. I read $10,000 for.
$10,000 for a seat.
Yeah.
But if you want a VIP box.
Ah, if you want a whole box. Yeah, fair play.
Which seats about 20 people.
Okay.
And has, you know, fully catered and everything.
Right.
That's at the extreme end.
Right.
But even, you know, New York Transit, what normally would cost $13 to go over to the stadium, is now $98 for the round trip. They're closing it down. You have to have a ticket for the game to get on the train. And it's got so bad that the mayor of New York, Mandami, he's managed to wangle, I think, 1,000 tickets. And he's got a lottery where you can get one for, I think, $50. So, you know, the mayor stepped in because the prices were just ridiculous.
He's apparently an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, he's an Arsenal fan. So he's probably a bit sick about the old Paris, Saint-Germain the other day.
Yeah, good game, though. I enjoyed the game. I thought it was emotional and tight and a bit of a connoisseur's game.
Yeah, and Arsenal have had a great season, so he's probably pretty happy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just looking at the premium seats for the final have been advertised at $33,000 a seat.
Wow. Even the group games, though, are excessive. At Arlington, Texas, England play Croatia. Seats start at an eye-watering $500. And unsurprisingly, less than half have been sold. I mean, the spectre of half-empty stadium, that's not an attractive one.
It won't be half-empty, because what will happen is, because of all these resale like StubHub, these websites where, you can buy these tickets. As it gets nearer, people will offload those tickets and lower the prices.
Sure.
So you'll be buying them from a reseller, and you'll probably be able to go to the game for $100. My daughter has tickets for France v. Senegal, and she bought them on StubHub for not a ridiculous amount of money. I'm not exactly sure, but, a couple of hundred dollars, not thousands.
Yes, well, that would be a good game. I'd like to see that. How's it being celebrated commercially? Is there a lot of landfill being produced in celebration of the World Cup? I mean, sort of souvenirs.
That's interesting, because I haven't seen a lot of that. I've seen more for the 250th semi-quincentennial celebration.
Yeah, let's talk about that, and actually, because that's the other
That's
the other big thing that is happening. You're a semi-quincentennial. Who ever thought of calling it
a
semi-quincentennial? The quarter millennium, the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, happens in less than a month from today, July the 4th. How excited are you?
I like July 4th, but I like it because it's, it's a long weekend. It's I enjoy it. People are in a good mood. I run a race as a small community race, a couple of 100 people go run 5 miles. But what I don't like is the fireworks, in that New Jersey for decades had a ban on fireworks, and a few years ago, for God knows what reason, they rescinded the ban. So now I can go into Walmart, spend $100 and come out with enough armaments for a small country. I mean, it's ridiculous. My dog hates it, and the wildlife hates it. And I just can't stand it. But there's a lot of people, you see a lot of T-shirts and a lot of, as we get nearer to July, it'll become bigger. The first event, it's got a bit weird, right? Because 10 years ago, Congress appointed America 250, a bipartisan group, I think gave them $100 million or something, said, start planning. So they were a little, I guess you could say, conservative, and it was historical events, educational programming, volunteering initiatives. They took that sort of nationwide community events. And then when President Trump got in, he felt that this was all, way too staid and conservative. So he started Freedom 250, which was much more about spectacle. He transferred bunches of money from the national parks to fund Freedom 250. So on June 14th, we have a ultimate fighting championship on the White House lawn. A big giant cage is being built there for a cage match. The biggest firework display ever in the history of ever will go off on the 4th. A Grand Prix in August will race around the streets of
This is all Trump stuff. Has he done a memorial? Yeah. Has he done his memorial arch? Has that happened?
No, they're still fighting about the arch.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think he's got the money approved for it. And just as an aside, a judge ruled that his name has to be taken off the Kennedy Center.
Yes.
He had it renamed as the Donald J. Trump and John F. Kennedy Center.
Well, they're not going to build the art. The arts won't happen before July the 4th, will it?
What about this
kerfuffle going on with the big gig? Martina McBride, the Commodores, Young MC, Brett Michaels, they've all said no, thank you.
First of all, they said yes. We would love to do it.
Yeah.
Young MC, Morris Day. I don't know who Morris Day is. Sounds like somebody from Gardner's Question Time. But anyway, then they found out that it wasn't the America 250, the sort of formal, official, approved. It was Freedom 250, which is basically MAGA. And so the only ones left, as of, I think, a couple of days ago, it may have changed, was Vanilla Ice, Flo Rida, and Fab Morvan. And if you don't know who Fab Morvan is, he was half of that international smash hit Milli Vanilli band a few years ago.
Milli Vanilli. Yeah, I remember. I think I even bought the single. I bought one of those. That was a long, long time ago, though, Ant. That was like the 90s.
The 90s. The guy's into his 60s, but he's still in.
Right. Right.
So I don't know if that'll even go ahead, but yes, they all pulled out when they found out that it was really more of a MAGA event than a nationally, you know, bipartisan event.
Yes.
So it's like America's throwing the biggest party and arguing about it, which is very, very typically American, I think. But it would be as if the British Parliament decided to do an event, and then Downing Street said, "Oh, we're doing a competitive event." That would be a good analogy.
Yes. So actually, it's about Trump. The
100%. 100%. He's asked the Mint to create a $250 bill with his picture on it. Now, I don't know if that will come to fruition because there's a law that says no living person can appear on the currency, but he's floated that idea.
I'm sure we could make a deal somehow, you know. Yes, yeah. Posthumously, you could have your face on the bill, but it has to be posthumous. What are we going to do about it?
just talking about a great big giant musical event, the halftime show for the final, for the World Cup final, just going back to that a bit, is pretty powerful.
Oh, yeah. Who?
BTS, you know, the K-pop phenomenon.
Yes.
Shakira and Madonna.
Oh, my God. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
that's a halftime show, isn't it?
Okay, that is a halftime show. Fair play. Yes. And that's mid-July. That's a long ways off still, isn't it, the final?
Yes, yeah. I think it's July 17th, I think. Yeah.
Well, listen, man, it's close to you, so who knows? A windfall might come your way, and you might be in one of those boxes.
I don't think I'll be in a box, but I wouldn't. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that I'll be there. I'm actually going to a game on Monday, a sort of a pre-World Cup friendly, which is the Philadelphia Union are playing Ivory Coast.
I sort of warm up for the Ivory Coast. And before I let you go, I know this is the time of year that corresponds with your birthday and the opening of the Royal Swimming Pool, which is a 3-day process, isn't it? Your swimming pool. I'm asking you this because I've just opened my swimming pool, but I fear that I haven't opened it with quite the same science as you. Just briefly run us through that, because
really?
your pool has two covers, doesn't it?
American
swimming pools seem to be subject to legislation that European swimming pools aren't. You have to have two covers. Tell us about that briefly.
Well, you don't have to have two covers. You have to have a cover that is best described as a trampoline, and it's sort of locked on. There's bolts in the concrete, and you unscrew them, and you pull this cover and you lock it on with the springs on it. Imagine like a trampoline.
Yeah, can you bounce on it? Do you bounce on it?
Yeah, you can bounce on it, but don't is probably
okay.
Yeah, and the idea is, and you also have to have I think it's a 1.5 meter fence all around, and the gates into that have to have springs on them so they're self-closing. And the idea is that toddlers can't get in there. You know, we all close our pools around September as the weather changes and the leaves start falling off the trees. So have one of these pools. You have to have one of these covers on it. And then I put another hard cover. That thing, the trampoline's like a mesh, so water can get through. But more importantly, UV gets through, and that's what grows the bacteria and the algae. So I put a hard cover on top just because I'm
right
masochist.
And this legislation exists for private pools. You're not talking about urbanizations or pools with access to the public.
This is all private. My neighbor on both sides have pools. It's very common here because we get these super hot summers. These regulations, I mean, they might be slightly different in different states, but I think pretty much everywhere you would have to. You could be fined if they don't come around and police it, but if there was an accident, which there is every year, then all of that would be scrutinized as part of that investigation, and you could be held liable if you weren't in compliance with these various regulations.
Heavy legislation. Listen, man, we've got to leave you because I've still got to get an ad break in, and I've just seen the time.
Okay.
It's minutes to 12.
Go get a cucumber sandwich.
Listen, man, time flies when you're enjoying yourself. That is the problem. It's
been lovely talking to you.
It's a nice problem. Listen, have a great weekend, and thank you so much for getting up so early. Listeners, Andy Wood is, what time is it? It's not even 6 o'clock at your time, is it?
Saturday morning. No, it's not 6 o'clock. It's 5 minutes to six.
That is above and beyond, man. Thank you so much. Listen, we look forward to talking to you from the World Cup final.
I'll do a live broadcast from my VIP box.
Fantastic. We'll look forward to that. Lots of love.
Thank you, mate.
Have a great weekend. Adios.
En Camino with Kid Hogg.
Time to tell you a story before we leave you. From Richard Strachan at New York Airport, the story of a United Airlines check-in receptionist confronted by a large, irate male. For anyone who's had to deal with an angry customer, this is for you. A crowded United Airlines flight has just been cancelled. The single receptionist was busy rebooking a long line of angsty, inconvenienced travellers. Suddenly, she was confronted by a man who'd pushed past the queue to the front of the desk. He slapped his ticket on the counter saying, "I have to be on this flight and it has to be first class." The receptionist replied, "I'm sorry, sir. I'll be happy to help you, but these folks are in front of you. If you'd like to wait in line, I'll do my best when it's your turn." The man was unimpressed. "Do you have any idea who I am?" he shouted. Without hesitation, the agent receptionist grabbed her public address microphone and announced clearly through the terminal, "May I have your attention, please? There's a passenger here at gate 14 who doesn't know who he is. If anyone can help him with his identity, please come to gate 14 immediately." The people in the queue behind him began to laugh. The man glared at the receptionist and through gritted teeth exclaimed, "F, boop, 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 you." Without flinching, she smiled at him and said, "I'm sorry, sir. You'll have to get in line for that too."
Brilliant.
How cool is that?
Oh, brilliant.
And on that note, we're going to leave you. We'll see you next week. It's been lovely having your company. Our thanks to Andy Wood for his inimitable letter from New York. From Janie.
Yes, goodbye, everybody.
And me, Kit Hogg. Bye-bye and happy weekend.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.